C-31. McCarthy Residence, Birchwood, Colorado. Dan began his explanation as to why he'd sent Trey to Lolo with a brief recap of his own trip to Richard Walker's cornfield, during which he had seen a clear vision of a triangle in the sky over the familiar valley, and after which he had conversed with Walker himself. Emma was stunned from the very beginning. "You spoke to Walker?" she asked, for starters. "After they called you there again, without you knowing, just like last year?" Dan nodded and continued to the more recent part, when only 22 hours ago he had received a second message of sorts in the form of a dream which told him the precise time when something big was going to happen at Lolo. Emma's next questions for the brothers were the obvious ones. Why hadn't they discussed any of this with her before now, and why had they sent Trey rather than themselves? Dan automatically recited the answers, obvious in his mind. She hadn't picked up his earlier calls, and he hadn't been called to Lolo like last year. This time he had been alerted to Lolo. Clark butted in to repeat what he'd told Dan about the difficulty they would have faced in reaching Lolo themselves without being seen and without struggling to justify a sudden and unplanned two-day road trip. "We didn't make this decision behind your back," Clark said to Emma. "Your back wasn't here." To Dan's mild surprise, Emma didn't display any outward signs of disagreeing with their course of action. Indeed, just a few seconds later, she voiced her support. "Trey was probably the best choice you had. We can trust him to come to us first with whatever he sees, before he goes public with it." A grin then crossed her face. "And at least you didn't send Tara." Dan and Clark shared a quick and uneasy look, as though wordlessly discussing whether or not this was a good time to tell Emma that Tara had seen Richard Walker after following their car to his place for an innocuous reason. Since it hadn't directly involved the messengers or any other external developments, Dan hadn't even mentioned this second trip to Walker's in his brief recap of recent events, and now very subtly shook his head to tell Clark that this wasn't the time to tell Emma anything about Tara. All of that could wait for tomorrow, once Tara was awake and Trey had reported his findings. But despite the subtleness of Dan's head-shaking signal, the silent exchange which preceded it had gone on long enough for Emma to notice. "What was that look?" she asked. "You didn't ask Tara to go before you asked Trey, did you?" "Of course not," Dan said, surprised Emma would even ask. A sharp intake of breath cut off Dan's words, and a pained grimace suddenly took over his expression. His hand shot to the back of his neck. No other part of his body moved at all. "Dan?" Emma yelled, rising from the bed and stepping towards his chair. "Are you?" This time, Emma's words were cut off by a cry of pain, somewhere between a yelp and a shriek, as she fell to the ground as though her legs had been swept from under her. She clasped the back of her own neck with two hands and let out a low bellow. Her legs and spine appeared to have stiffened while her hands moved slightly, as though trying to claw something out of the small scar where the messengers had once connected their communications interface. Clark's eyes flitted between the two of them for a few panic-filled moments before he crouched down to help Emma, who was clearly feeling the effects of whatever was causing their neck twinges far more acutely than the more accustomed Dan. Emma writhed in pain for several seconds until her body relaxed and her expression returned to something approaching normal. She took one hand away from the back of her neck, revealing more than a little blood where her fingernails had been digging into the soft skin. She wasn't crying, but there were tears of pain in her eyes. "Emma, are you okay?" Clark asked, trying to sound and look calmer than he was in an effort to relax her. He glanced quickly at Dan and saw that he too was now past the worst of the pain, but was also still holding one hand against his neck. Dan, having felt the initial burst of pain slightly earlier than Emma, only then realized that she was on the floor. He leapt to his feet, knocking his chair backwards, and hurried to her side. While Clark was reluctant to move her too much or too quickly, Dan wasted no time in helping Emma upright. He told her he was going to move her left hand, which was still pressed against her bleeding neck, and then gently did so. With a silent tilt of his head, he asked Clark to go upstairs to get something to clean her up. Clark got right to it. "It's okay," Dan whispered softly. "The first time is the worst." I don't know if you felt it because you're with me, because they wanted you to know for sure that I'm not crazy, or because whatever they just did at Lolo was a bigger intervention than the bolide at Kerguelen. All I know is that everything is okay. You'll get it on your hand, Emma replied weakly as Dan tried to move her blonde hair away from the surprising amount of blood on her neck. That's okay too, Dan said. He then carefully wiped the tears from under her eyes with his other hand. Don't worry. This one is clean. Emma quickly used the scrunchie around her right wrist to tie up her hair before leaning forward and resting her head on Dan's shoulder. I'm sorry I didn't totally believe you about Kerguelen right away, she said. When I said it could be a publicity stunt or a false flag or even random chance, if I'd known you'd felt something as painful as this, I never would have doubted it for a second. How the hell were you so calm after it? Because I know they're on our side, Dan said, and that was all. Clark returned through the unlocked door with a briefcase-like first aid kit in one hand and his phone in the other. Phone, Dan said. Clark hesitated for a second before it clicked in his mind. Oh, yeah, he said, quickly running back up and placing it outside the door. Sorry, man, I just got a text from Trey. He said something like, holy shit, double happening, unbelievable, I'll call when I'm in the van and it's safe to talk. He didn't say what it was, but it sounds like we're about to find out. Dan took the first aid kit from Clark and dabbed Emma's lightly bleeding scar with an antiseptic wipe. Thanks for the warning, she said sarcastically, recoiling at the sudden and sharp stinging feeling. The anticipation is the worst part, Dan replied. He then turned to Clark and asked him to check on the TV and computer for any live news streams or current trends which might hint at what had just happened, encouraging him to pay special attention to anything related to unusual lights in the sky. So far, the trend ticker had reported nothing of note. Emma used her hands to push herself to her feet, slowly shaking out the stiffness in her joints. You should check it out, she told Dan. I'm okay now. Dan didn't need to be encouraged twice. He lifted his laptop from the desk and carried it over to the bed where Emma had just taken a seat. Clark sat at the other side of him, looking keenly at the screen. Within a few clicks, they had their answer. Is this Kerguelen Part 2? Dan read aloud from the Blitz online headline. Fear and excitement as multiple eyewitnesses in northern Idaho and western Montana report spectacular meteor. The only photograph in the article was a low-quality image from a driver's dash cam, but it was enough to bring a smile to Dan's face. That's what he must have meant by double happening, Clark said. First Kerguelen, now Lolo. But if so many other people saw it, why did the messengers make you think we had to send someone? We'll find out exactly what he saw in a few minutes, Dan said, clicking away from the article to search for some more eyewitness reports and images. They didn't give me advance notice of this for nothing, so Trey's footage might show some important details no one else could see. For once in his life, Dan McCarthy had no idea just how right he was.